For November the 6th, 2015, we talk about Activision's King acquisition, La Mulana EX, and we ask you about the origin of your screen name. Welcome to Level 127. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
My name is David Meismith.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We're rocking it three style because Ben is ill tonight. So everybody sent him, I guess, your antibodies.
Let's be clear. Ben is ill every night. It's just the wrong kind.
Yeah. Yes. Ben is down with the sickness in the worst possible way right now. Like, literally, probably could you just I don't know, like, grab into your blood and take all the antibodies and, like, mail them to Ben in an envelope, I guess.
If he's still sick by the time that you guys hear this, though, we're in trouble.
I suppose. He sounded pretty sick.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Sad.
But, oh, well, we soldier on and we go forward. So I'm trying to think of any stuff. This is coming out on the day of our meetup, so it's not going to be any use to talk about that. I hope
you could listen to us while talking to us. I'm just saying it's a possibility.
I'd rather you didn't. I'm already nervous enough, and if you say I prefer the podcast version of these people to the real version, then that's more than my poor little heart can bear.
We don't have Cole to, like, extensively edit everything we say to make us sound smart. This is going to be troublesome.
I don't edit for content. So. Oh, well. So, yeah, there's all that stuff happening. We've got the Duck Stream coming up here soon. I don't know. It's a busy time for the network. Anybody have any anecdotes from over the past week?
Nah, man, I got some gaming-related anecdotes, though.
Oh, yeah, so we should probably talk about video games. Let's do it.
I will never give you the anecdote.
Don't give Ben the anecdote.
No, he needs your anic bodies. So, like I said, just reach on into that blood and put them anic bodies inside the envelope, not with the antibodies, because they don't get along. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. But we got the usual kind of episode for you. We got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and we're going to start with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games. Dennis, how about you? What's your story?
Sure. So my story is about a game that I've been trying to find a slot to talk about for a while because I'm wildly excited about it. And I'm just now getting around to it. So it's because there was a big feature done on it in Polygon where they talk about kind of where the concept for Atlas Reactor came from and how it kind of the development process behind it so far. But Atlas Reactor is described by the developers as XCOM meets a MOBA. Anyone who knows anything would know that this is Frozen Synapse Prime. And I'm a little miffed that they're just, like, pretending that Frozen Synapse doesn't exist, because everyone knows how I feel about Frozen Synapse. It's amazing. And this game is kind of that with a team-based layer to it.
Team-based,
yeah.
Not teen-based, okay.
Not teen, although some of the characters are teens.
Okay.
It would appear anyway. But essentially, you know, it's a strategy or a turn-based strategy game where the turns play out simultaneously. So you are planning your move, trying to anticipate what your opponent is going to do at the same time as your opponent is doing the same thing to you. And broadly, it's teams of four. And what'll happen is there's a move phase where characters get into position. And then based on that, you can either choose to dodge, you know, one direction or another, or just shoot. And those will play out to have a series of hits or misses. And then you just kind of repeat that, trying to kind of outmaneuver and outguess what your opponent is going to do. I am incredibly excited for this game. I signed up for, like, the alpha, the beta, whatever they'll give me as soon as I heard about it. Hope that I can experience that. But this feels like something that was made just for me. The characters all have different abilities, so it's got that MOBA feel where there's lots of diversity and interesting power sets to choose from. And you can play with both, you know, that individually just for a different gaming experience for yourself, but then also all those different characters can compose different team makeups, which you could have like a very aggressive team or a very defensive team or a team with really strong synergies between your powers, you know. So the game was kind of designed with competitive esports in mind. And it's kind of this weird thing where it feels like... It feels like they're uncomfortable overtly saying, yes, we're going, this is going to be an esport. Cause I don't think it's as simple as that. Like the game has to be fun to play and there has to be a community for it and all that.
I mean, Sony basically did that too, that crazy mech ball game that they're putting out for the VR.
Oh,
so
it's an, yeah.
Yeah. It's an esport that requires you to have this multi-hundred-dollar piece of hardware on top of the, you know, on top of the other multi-hundred-dollar piece of hardware you have to use to run it.
Technically, that's football, though, a sport that requires you to have multi... I don't know if they're $100 pieces of hardware, but there's a lot of hardware going along with it.
I suppose. There's this... I think that, hey, this is going to be the eSport, is the... This is going to be a massive trilogy with multimedia crossover function.
Yeah, that seems to be the way things are swinging. So yeah. Like I said, to the team's credit, and this is Rift develop, or sorry, not Rift.
Trion Worlds.
Trion Worlds, yeah. the developers behind Rift that are making this. So to their credit, it seems self-aware of them to not just be overtly, you know, hey, this is the next esport, but they're clearly designing with that in mind.
Yeah.
So I will be watching this with anticipation.
Yeah, it's funny because like League of Legends or Dota is the new WoW in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
like,
no, you're not kidding.
Yeah, that's weird to me because I don't know. I'm not going to say I'm officially old because there are people listening who are chronologically older than me. I'm old at heart.
You know who you are.
No, people would be like, yeah, you asshole, you're only 28. Like, what's going on? But like, no, but it's like, oh, I feel super out of touch because that is just a world that I... A, have no knowledge of, and B, have no interest in. So something like this comes along, like, yeah, okay, cool. I can understand that academically, but I can't get excited about the competitive aspect of it, even if this, you know, turn-based, asymmetric, tactical thing is, you know, cool, right?
Yeah, I'll be interested to see both how it is to play, but also how it is to watch. So they have the first gameplay video up in this feature, and it is, at least in the 5 minutes I spent with it, completely incomprehensible to me. which to be fair, MOBAs were the first time I watched them, and so I think that there's probably just a nature of, okay, I need to understand the systems going on here a little better before I can engage in a viewer capacity. But broadly, what's happening is there is a 30-second phase to plan. Everyone has 30 seconds to plan their move, and then that plays out. And then from what I can tell, everyone has 30 seconds to plan their dodge and/or their attack, and then that plays out. And so, you know, again, if you use your dodge at the right time, you'll have a bunch of people attacking you in a place that you're not, and they'll miss, and then you'll be in a better position, et cetera. Yeah. I would say it feels clunky that there's this 30-second break before a very short burst of action. But again, that's football. So,
yeah. And then they can just put commercials in that 30 seconds. Like that's yeah. Just enough time for it.
Yeah. There are also some, you know, some ways in which it animates the turns playing out, which seems kind of, not cinematic, but you know, even though everything is planned simultaneously, they kind of show you what happens one thing at a time. So you can kind of hopefully understand the action a little bit better versus it just being a completely crazy scrum. Mm-hmm. Again, I need a little better fundamental understanding of the rules of the game to be able to watch it right now. But I could see that working well. So as long as that break doesn't slow things down too much, and as long as they can find a community that enjoys it and enjoys watching it, I think this thing's got a real shot.
Nice.
And here's a game that is not completely reliant on you having like, you know, hugely fast reaction times.
Yes, that is a big factor as well. I'm kind of wondering if that the fact that somebody without those lightning quick reflexes is going to work against this, because people will say, oh, that is for, you know, basic beta boys. or something, you know, like just oh, that's not a real man's game. You gotta ruin your wrist by age 23 if you want to get them sweet gamer fuel bucks.
Yeah, but then again, there is no connection screwed me. There is no react quicker. It's like if you lose, it is very clear like you strategically were outplayed.
Wait, I feel like that also would work against it.
Oh, fair enough. Depending on what you're looking for.
Yeah.
I think a large portion of Hearthstone's success in the streaming community is that it's something that's not instantaneous and that people can follow and kind of speculate alongside, so they can kind of project themselves into the situation, say, oh, here's what I would do, and then see what the person actually does. And I feel like that's a little bit harder to do in MOBAs, just because, especially when things get intense and there's a big team fight, like everything unfolds so quickly that it's kind of like, oh my, what the hell was that? And this might kind of give just enough space for people to be able to get back into that kind of projecting themselves into it mode.
Nice. Sure.
Huh. I'll be interested to see how accessible it is.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I know that's kind of been my, you know, I've bounced off most of these just because most of them, you know, aren't really that accessible.
It's like, oh, I'm actually playing the worst hero. Okay, I just picked the one that I like the look of. Yeah, and the other thing to be aware of is that they're going free to play, and they're designing for that from the start. That's good. And if they can, I think, you know, if they can mirror what Blizzard has done in the past, great, because I think Blizzard in general does a really good job with free to play. But you know, I don't know if they're going to get greedy and turn it into something where you have to invest if you want to be at all competitive, which obviously would just ruin it.
Just to play devil's advocate, I sure hope they do, because I think that's the only way to do free-to-play right, is to say, look, there's no free lunch. You're going to have to pay money, grow up, and get over it.
So you would prefer them just have them buy a box or buy a download?
Or I just think, realistically, If you could really play the game free to any real capacity, the company would be out of business. Therefore, you have to. It's no, none of these games are really free to play at, you know, high levels. And therefore, in my opinion, in the same way that it's better for them to design, you know, free to play to begin with, I think most games would be better off if they dropped the act and said, look, yeah, you can participate for free and, you know, be a fan and, you know, play the game and have fun. But if you really care about the game, you're eventually going to have to drop some money.
Well, it depends on at what point you care. Like, so again, using Hearthstone as an example, I ranked in the top 20% of players last season. And I have not given them a dime. Right now, yeah. I'm not going to win any tournaments anytime soon. I'm not even close to that, but I have a lot of fun with the game, and I'm reasonably competitive. So, you know, now again, to your point, like I did, maybe it's a bad thing. I'm not giving Blizzard any money for this thing that I really enjoy. And if the push came to shove, like I probably should be giving them some money for it. I've gotten so much enjoyment out of it. But we'll see whether or not they're able to walk that line with Atlas Reactor.
Sure. Yeah, I think I just compare it to real sports where you know, like, yeah, anyone can show up to a 5K and run and stuff like that. But you know, if you really want to be competitive, you're going to want to, you know, get some decent racing shoes, you know, some things like that.
But there's also the idea that you're going to grow into it. Like,
right, exactly. I think that should be the ideal. Yeah. I'm just saying I don't like the... I guess I don't like the anti, like, pay-to-win thing, yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know. How do you square that away with games where most of the pay stuff is cosmetic? Like Dota, a lot of the pay stuff is cosmetic. Same thing with, I guess you pay in League to get to, I don't know what I'm talking about, guys. With a lot of them, maybe you pay to get a different hero, so-and-so. Yeah. But the majority of it is like the hat model, almost.
I know. I'd be interested to know in those games how many people that actually play with anything approaching like seriousness have never bought a character. Because, like, my understanding, and I think this is a good way to do it, is, like, most of those games, basically, there's a rotating stable of heroes that you can play, like, six, you know, heroes for this month.
Yeah, that's how Heroes of the Storm works.
Right. And I think that's a good example of, like, if you're, you know, if you want to do the equivalent of, like, you know, show up to a, you know, 5K and run, or, you know, play backyard football, whatever. Like, you can do that. You can, you know, compete. You can, you know, you can be part of the game. But at the same time, I don't think anyone who's competitive is going to, I'll just get good at all the heroes because I have no control over which ones I actually can play with. And I feel like that's a good example where effectively you have no choice but to at some point buy a hero or grind up in-game currency.
I'm not opposed to needing to pay money to get anything, so that's like you know, it's hard for me to have a lot of sympathy for the other side of that.
You almost need a qualifier. It's like pay to win in basic everyday competition, and then pay to win in like tournament high level competitive play. Those are two very different worlds.
So that's Atlas Reactor. Any final thoughts on that?
Can't wait. Give me in that alpha, come on.
Best name ever.
It's kind of Teflon to me, actually. Like, it just kind of like slides off my brain.
Are you saying Atlas Reactor Shrugged?
No, it just like those are I don't know what it means.
No, it's interesting. They've got a really like cool world built up around it. That does feel kind of like they've really thought about that, and there's a whole story on their website about anti-AI stuff, but with like a wink and smile. So we'll see.
I really like their world building for Rift, so it seems like they've got some pedigree.
David, what's your story?
Sure. My story is that apparently Codblops 3 is going to have modding and or will likely have modding and map creation on the PC.
Hooray!
Yeah, sort of. They're releasing a alpha in March, but they've said that it may or may not make it into the final game. And the other thing they basically said is that the only way you'll be able to play any of this is unranked.
I mean, that makes sense. They need to control that experience. Why? Right? What I mean for the rankings, like if somebody's going to be modding this to make it, you know, play substantially differently, why should that count for rankings when the majority of people are going to be playing it vanilla?
Yeah, I think I can understand that. Well, I can understand that if you're going to insist on having matchmaking. But I feel like the problem with that is that then means, you know, at least in previous versions, that it's divorced from the character building aspects of the game, which, you know, are kind of a big draw of Call of Duty's approach to multiplayer.
Oh, so not only is it not ranked play, but you don't get any experience for it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
But I mean, they need to control that curve.
Why?
So that you can't just go into a feeder map or whatever, a trainer map, get as much of the get as much experience points as you can, and then dump back into the main game with more tools. Like that seems weird to me.
I don't know. I would argue
you haven't put in your virtual Protestant work ethic.
I mean, kind of.
What I would argue is if someone does that, just because you got all the tools doesn't mean you know how to use them.
Right.
And there might be something, you know, if there's one overpowered weapon that everyone is like, oh, you have to have this. I could see that maybe if everyone just kind of...
That's always the case. Like,
not usually.
Yeah.
Depends. I mean, they have gone in the past and like nerfed certain weapons and stuff like that. to very vehement reactions from the community. So we'll see if they continue to do it. But yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about someone who, you know, if two people square off against each other, one has earned their way to whatever rank and the other has, you know, cheated, quote unquote, their way to the rank, I'd put my money on the person who's earned their way there.
Right. But this is also like a team game, right? Like, so if anybody could just buy whatever piece of gear and an MMO they wanted, or, you know, this is the problem with like, what is it? Twink characters in MMOs where somebody buys the level 60 so they can get in the raiding game, but they haven't learned it. Like, this has bigger effects on like the entire player community.
I feel like maybe that's the case if, in like, tournament play, but I feel like you know, pickup games are always clusterfucks anyways.
Right.
Yeah. I know. I'm not a huge fan of let's punish everybody because someone might break the rules.
I suppose. The majority of the people are going to be playing the game that the designer designed. And then they're saying, hey, over here, you can play, you know, with whatever rules that you want using all these tools. We just want to have control over this experience while we're giving you the ability to have control over your experience.
Yeah. I mean, this is why you have an alpha, is to like throw that out there and mm-hmm. see if people abuse it and if enough people abuse it to make it not fun and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know for me, this basically boils down to, we're going to put in, you know, map support and modding. We're just going to make it so you don't want to play it. Which I know.
Better than not having it at all, though.
To me, it's the same. But but I mean, that's just me.
And is this all moot without dedicated servers, or?
I honestly, the issue to me, I really don't care. I feel like this is kind of a similar thing to dedicated servers, as much as I don't care about dedicated servers. I don't care about OMFG, the elite host advantage. I care about server browsers and the ability of people to make their servers play the way they want to play.
Okay.
So it's control, not necessarily performance.
Right. A lot of it, the biggest thing for me is I like large player count games, and those generally aren't allowed on official servers.
Okay, like large player count, like more than the maps were designed for, or
I would say probably like 16, maybe 12 players would be the absolute minimum I would have any interest in a game.
Okay.
So,
that makes me curious. Is there a competitive like Battlefield scene?
Yeah, like, is that something I believe there is.
Because that would be really impressive to see if there was like really coordinated team efforts on that scale.
I was at some point, I don't know how I got involved with this because I sucked hardcore, like even more than I normally suck at these games. I was at one point like involved with like a competitive like Battlefield Guild, and it was kind of interesting, you know, seeing, you know, planning out attacks and, you know, those sorts of things. But
yeah, I don't know. There should just be like, they should just bring MAG back where it's the 256.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Like for me, that's a big thing. Like I really loved the early Call of Duty games because you could get those, and as they go by, they keep decreasing the player count. It seems like each generation.
Hmm. I don't know. I mean, it just sounds like you and the series have grown apart.
Yeah, but that's like, that'd be fine if there were any other viable, like multiplayer shooters. Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta go with the Legions.
Yeah. It's hard for me because I just haven't, again, like with the esport thing, it's hard for me to get up like a real to get really angry about this. This sounds cool to me that they're actually building it in, because I would be curious to see what like a dedicated fan team could do with these tools. Like, I don't know, it's been a while since that's been a real part of the community. And with how everything looks, like, can a fan team develop something that looks and feels like a professional thing when everything is so detailed now? You know, does this all still hold true? Like the map making side of this is sounds incredibly cool to me.
Yeah. And it just, monkeys and typewriters, my friend. Monkeys and typewriters.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, it's a foregone conclusion. There's probably going to be some pretty cool stuff. But, like, having seen, like, the trainer maps and stuff that popped up specifically to exploit the systems around, like, Team Fortress 2, you know, to the point where there were so many of them, they had to change the way that Team Fortress worked. It just, whenever you have a system, whenever you give people like enough freedom around it, they're going to figure out a way to exploit it in a way that detracts from everybody's experience with it. And that's, and that's where I'm willing to give the studio a lot of control over the experience in order to make sure that it's an equal playing ground, you know?
See, I don't know. I guess I just don't care about things being fair. I feel like that's not the point of games.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's what I did there. Somebody really appreciated that.
I want you to know I'm shaking my head at you.
Oh man. And just to complete the trifecta of stories that is just the world feels alien and strange to me. Moon pies. Wake up this morning. Wake up this morning to see a story that apparently Activision bought King, the developer behind Candy Crush, for $6 billion.
Yeah, right.
What? Ugh. Okay, so all these comparisons are popping up all over the internet, but like, just think about how ridiculous this is, that like Disney bought Star Wars and basically all of Lucasfilm, so including Indiana Jones and stuff like that, for $4 billion. Okay. Yeah. Candy Crush, $2 billion more than that. Oculus Rift, I think, went to Facebook for like $1.5 billion. Like the leading
Minecraft is two, right?
So like 1.5 maybe, or two. Yeah, I think it was closer to two, but somewhere on that order of magnitude, right? But like immediately after Facebook bought Oculus, which is, you know, the lead contender for virtual reality, which everybody seems to, you know, to care about, they turned around and bought WhatsApp for like $10 billion.
I don't get
so a chat program is worth more than a physical thing that it, you know, I don't know, it's weird to me. And then just King Candy Crush, $6 billion. What? I don't have anything more intelligent to say about it.
How many
to be fair, I mean,
pay out over
how many years?
Yeah, like that's they've got to be thinking in terms of like 10-year investment or something.
I think so. The language around the agreement's actually pretty dense, and even the summaries of it seem to diverge a little bit. But the idea being that Activision basically is going into financing to get the capital for this. On the idea that there's enough blood in this stone that they're going to be able to offset that. Like, they don't have this cash on hand. This is just a limb that they're really going out on. So they're like mortgaging everything in order to do this.
To give a comparison that I think is probably appropriate. Apparently, amount of money that leaves America each year in addictive illegal drugs is about 10 to 30 billion.
Okay,
so I mean, if you know, six billion for addictive legal drugs, you know, that kind of squares.
Huh. Yeah, I suppose, but like for the rights to the most popular cheap, or the most popular legal drug, like, or the most popular version of what has become the actual model for the way most things make money on mobile.
Yeah.
So
I imagine they've got plans, just we'll see now even more versions of this game though.
Oh yeah, they're gonna take it. They're gonna Angry Birds. There's gonna be.
They're gonna have to.
Yeah, it's gonna be Frozen. No, I guess that's Disney, so it'd be EA. Fuck it. They're going to license it and do a whole bunch of other stuff. It's just weird.
World of Warcraft.
That's just, well, yeah, there we go. They are Activision, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't understand how anything gets a value anymore.
Well, yeah, see, I heard this story on NPR and it kind of got me thinking. Do you consider, like, if someone strictly plays these games, would you consider that person to be a gamer?
Yeah, I also think that the term gamer is dumb, but yes, I would say that they play video games. So
see, I would say not. I feel like at that point, that's the words kind of lost all relevant meaning.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to tell somebody they don't belong to my club because they don't play the same game that
I don't think it has anything with a club. It's just, you know, there's no relation between, you know, the two hobbies.
There's no similarities of
like culture or, you know, activity or anything like that.
What's the nice way to say you're a filthy casual gamer?
See, I don't know. I just feel like it's like comparing apples to oranges.
The same conversation was kind of at the forefront 6 years ago, or 9 years ago when the Wii came out, right? Like all of a sudden we have a bunch of grandmas in here who mostly played a bunch of that, but there were also people like this that exposed more people to video games than really would have been exposed to before. It's a different flavor of the thing, but I'd still consider it a thing. Especially like when catering to them and the strategies that cater to them affect so much else about what gets back to us.
I feel like that seems like a miscalculation to have there be a lot of, backwards influence simply because it seems to me like they're, again, two more or less unrelated things.
I don't know. I mean, it's proving to be a way for studios to make money. I don't know if it's going to be substantial in the long term. I think that it's important for us to care about these people and to know, you know, and to recognize them as kind of being, if not the same as people who play the same kind of games that we do, at least neighbors, because what happens there does come over here, even if it is a miscalculation.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. So yeah,
well, I'll be excited to see what they churn out because I can't imagine them doing anything but more Candy Crush games. Mm-hmm. We're like, here's our new dark gritty IP from King. Now that it's under the Activision banner.
No. I think that this might be. I don't know. Could this possibly be like a $10 billion or a $6 billion talent acquisition? Like to bring this team in and help Activision figure out how to monetize a bunch of stuff that wasn't previously being monetized.
At least according to like the NPR story I heard, that's exactly what they said.
So here's where I think this falls apart, and I will talk about defining the people who play as gamers. Because the people who are throwing buckets of money at the Candy Crush games are gamers who are otherwise not involved in games, don't exactly really have a feel for the landscape, and maybe don't have as much of a, hey, this seems kind of scuzzy sensor built in, where, you know, this is just the world they know. And so, yeah, I'll fork over some money and oh my God, I spent $10,000. So
that's, I mean, aside from like, some, you know, some oligarchs in Singapore or something like that, I don't know, people are spending $10,000. I think that
money.
Maybe they don't have that because they're just, you know, we are used to the idea of paying a whole bunch of money up front for a game. And I doubt that there are that more than maybe, you know, 10% of the people who play that game have put more than $60 into this game that they've gotten far more hours out of than I've gotten out of any $60 game that I've bought.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, my understanding is that the model for like free to play generally is you have a very small number of people that subsidize everyone else.
Well, yeah, it's the whales, and there are people who have like written exposés or articles about like, yep, you know, I worked for one of these publishers, and you're kidding yourself if you don't think we're not watching everything that you're doing and trying to cater everything to getting you to press buy, down to figuring out that a particular whale likes a particular sports team, and then targeting an offer of an item or something that is in their sports team's colors. Like, it is down to that level, trying to create these Harlan Ellison traps for you with the data capabilities that they have.
Yeah. But to finish the thought, though, mm-hmm. like, that flies in that world. Mm-hmm. I feel like if gamers proper, or however you want to say it, like, it, pretty much anyone who's engaged enough to listen to this podcast would probably smell that a mile away in a game that they are used to, and be setting off alarms of either just, well, not for me then, and leaving, or actively going out and campaigning against these games.
Mm-hmm. Although I feel like the counterpoint to that was kind of our last story, in that, like, if I had any choice, I would definitely play, first person shooters that had, good server browsers and, allowed large scale, gameplay, stuff like that. This is all assuming that, the developers don't just decide that's more profitable not to make those games anymore.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that saying we are above that, like, I don't think we're as smart or savvy as on the whole as we think we are in that regard. And I think that these people at King, and pretty much anybody who is trying to figure out how to make this money, they're making that money on nothing. I have no idea how this value was set there, but they're doing it by figuring out how to make people who aren't used to paying money for stuff, they're playing this game for free, and so they're trying to get them from zero to anything, which is a much bigger wall than looking at a group of people who have already put $60 into this to, try and get more out of it. We've already decided it's worth spending money to play these things, and certain versions of these tactics are probably not going to fly for us, especially the most blatant ones that are kind of adapted to that. But they have the capability, with the analytics and stuff, to actually get inside our heads and figure out ways to not coerce us into buying, because nothing is that forceful.
To make it worth our while.
Yeah, but to make
us an offer we can't refuse.
Well, yeah, but to make the thing that's advantageous to them the easiest thing to do.
I think the whole thing it comes down to is the experience a good experience?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think a lot of the criticism of Candy Crush to a certain degree is because it's kind of a crappy game.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say also, how honest is it? How transparent, how honest, how coercive, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing you want to go way down the line is Activision has seen the writing on the wall, and we're going to see paying for a game up front just become this thing of the past.
Mm-hmm.
And the expectation of gamers, or just the new normal, will be that you go get any game you want for free. They'll all be designed so that you can get a base game, just on your system without paying anything. And then everything will be kind of pay what you want for what you want in the game.
I mean, that's what Guitar Hero Live is.
See?
Well, yeah.
I feel like the issue with that is assuming we're not just talking like the dystopia future where games suck, that only works for a subset of games, by which I mean like unless Gone Home is charging me by the minute, there it's kind of hard to monetize that experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or even like an Uncharted game. I mean, that's what you beat in like 10-15 hours.
But I mean, The Last of Us had purchasable helmet packs for multiplayer.
Yeah,
sure, but I'm saying that works for multiplayer, that works for like puzzle games, stuff like that. It doesn't really work for story-based games.
Yeah.
So unless you do like I said, go the dystopia route and have like Dead Space where,
So, Oblivion came out in 2006. All right. The people who kind of had the ability to be not like affected. Yeah. The people who had the ability to be affected by that. Somebody who turned 18 when that game came out was born in 1988. Now that person is 26 and the most relevant market for a bunch of that stuff, you know, they're like actually 16, you know, they're the I forget the horrible term that I heard, but Generation Z, there we go. Like, you know, submillennials, right? Who have access to their parents' credit cards.
I like submillennials. That makes me feel superior.
Yeah. but like what I'm saying is
the
like
boot has turned.
When we hear about stuff like this, we think about the horse armor stuff from Oblivion and we're like, huh, that was pretty dumb. That was a test. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly the kind of stuff that is kind of being sold. For about that same amount of money nowadays, we have the antibodies to that because we are pretty entrenched in that way. Somebody who is 15 now, my little sister, for example, doesn't have those antibodies, you know,
and might not even view it as something that needs antibodies. You'd be how old fashioned, you old person, you expect to
out of the way, old man,
increments instead of up front. Yeah. Yeah. I said, maybe they've seen the writing on the wall and that's the direction everything is headed.
Yeah. And so it makes sense to get this team in hand to figure out a way to do this.
Yeah. I don't
start something that's worth $6 billion.
Yeah. Let's go.
Ideas? Right. Write me with your ideas.
Yes.
We'll have some together in the next month or two.
I'll be honest. I sure hope not, just because I've never seen that end well. I've never seen that end well for games that aren't called Kingdom of Loathing.
Right. I don't know. It's really weird. This to me looks like the makings of a bubble, actually. And there are several bubbles happening in games right now, but this is a pretty big and pretty like momentous one. And also just the idea that, you know, King are the people who have poisoned the well for anybody else who wants to make money on mobile. So having that spread to everything else might have a pretty deleterious effect on existing business models. It's really, it can be discouraging in the worst possible case. So it might not end well for anything around it too. The fire could spread from the neighbor's house, you know?
I'm curious, just this kind of off topic, but what do you think of some of the other bubbles?
Specifically like indie game bubbles. I think that is something where there is a real glut in discoverability is going to be a problem. I think that we're running into kind of the ceiling of where HD systems and kind of big AAA consoles can be. I'm not saying anything new here. This is just stuff that I'm, you know, patterns that I'm hearing other people point out. But the idea that, you know, you're seeing just kind of the AAA stuff be consolidated and nobody really knows what to do with current hardware even 2 years in.
Which is funny because the AAA is on a bubble and the indie scene is on a bubble
and the mobile scene is on a bubble. It's really scary if you think about it.
Everything is on a bubble all the time.
I know. It'd be interesting to like have there been mainstream like media that have you know, just as a whole bubbled in situations where they weren't being replaced by a more modern technology.
The music industry bubbled in 1999. That's when so CDs were priced the highest, and they were also selling the same number of them. You know, like they're selling more of them. They were priced the highest. They were pushing the most volume. Mm-hmm. And so that started being chipped away by like piracy and stuff. And like iTunes didn't really hit a swing until it was made available on Windows. And that's when that particular model like picked up and Apple kind of rewrote that industry. I think that is, you know, we're not facing nearly the same crisis. Like piracy is not the thing. I mean, you could say that piracy devalues the art. And kind of pushes the price down to free. And we are in a place right now where mobile has already pushed the value all the way down to basically nothing, at least up front, or hidden the value behind that, but ostensibly created this downward pressure on things that didn't play by those rules. And then in the indie space, you have stuff, you know, driving down to where people don't want to pay more than $10 for a game, if that. And then in AAA, realistically, these games should cost more than they are. I'm not making the Evolve argument, but, you know, just like, is there's this massive downward pressure because people are fucking broke.
Yeah, I think the thing that's interesting, and again, we're getting so far into the weeds, but I think the thing that's interesting with pricing on video games, it seems like, is just it doesn't because I feel like there's almost a they stabbed themselves in the back in that by setting it up to, you know, doing a more or less a price fixing thing of like every game's going to cost $60 no matter what. The end result of that is inflation never happens for game prices.
Right.
Except with a console generation jump, which actually are PS4 games locked at 60?
Yeah,
that's interesting.
The last price jump was in the right before the leap to the 360, like that particular generation. I remember being in retail at the time when original Xbox games and even PS2 games were starting to do very stripped down collector's editions with like tin cases and maybe a soundtrack CD inside of it for $10 more to kind of test people's kind of sensitivity to that. But games have been at $60 for a brand new AAA game or, you know, brand new console game for 10 years now.
Right. Yeah. So it would be like the equivalent of getting a raise every 10 years, which doesn't really work.
Nope. I mean, some people it would work for the employer.
Right. Which I guess in this situation is
the
us,
consumer. Yeah, so. Exactly.
Now the foot is on. Okay, I've butchered that metaphor twice this podcast.
So even the like worm has turned. So yes. Even the lowliest kind of member of the society has noticed this and is working against you. So $60 from 2005 and 2015, that's like 73. So games should cost $75 right now, but they don't.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, should is a weird way to say that. Like, people are fucking broke, and if you raise the price, fewer people are going to get to experience these awesome things. However, fewer awesome things are going to be made if nobody can make money off of them.
Well, I think I kind of feel like the whole problem is the price fixing. In terms of, you know, the idea that every game is not made equal.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't make sense for every game to be priced the same.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and that everything drops, right? Pretty much 2 months after it comes out. But and we've gone on for a while on this,
longer
than we normally do. But it was an interesting line of conversation. I just want to make sure we leave time for the rest of the show. But yes, King bought for $6 billion. I have no idea what anything is worth.
have we made a Hail to the King joke yet?
No.
Okay.
I mean,
okay,
is it a joke or is it just saying a thing from that thing?
I don't know. I regardless, I'm pretty sure it's mandatory.
Okay, go ahead.
I've got nothing. I'm not the funny one on this podcast.
You're just an idea, man.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer section where we ask you all a question and you answer it. Dennis, what's the question we ask the nice people?
The question, which actually comes from Jala, so she's here with us in spirit, if not in person, is what is the origin story of your screen name? How long have you had it, and would you ever change it?
Yeah. So where did this come from? I'm always interested in the factors that go into this, especially like, I don't know, like screen names don't seem to be much of a thing anymore, but a lot of people probably around our age have them from earlier on. So let's
it's a very ephemeral kind of.
Yeah.
What do the sub millennials do?
I think it's just their name. It's either their name or anonymous. There's no in between. There's no pseudonyms. Okay. Yeah.
I would love to go by my name because I like my name.
Yeah.
But I just feel like that I just know how that the internet is for assholes, and therefore I don't want my name to be out on the internet, which is why I make a podcast with, name.
Yeah, with your real name and your voice and your opinions. And fortunately, nobody like consumes this because it takes time and you have to pay attention to it. But let's get into everybody else's responses and then we can do ours at the end.
Sure.
So we start off with David, who writes in saying, "Hi, I'm on your podcast." Hey, David. No, this is another David from the Facebook group. The World of Warcraft name generator spit out something close, and I tweaked a few letters to make it sound better, and poof, Therendsa was born. This is funny for me because I know people's real names from Facebook, and I know their screen names from Twitter and Slack, but it is not often that I am really able to pair them.
Yeah, the dots are not always connected. And then sometimes it's different between PSN and Steam, and it's a whole thing.
Yeah, so David, I knew of Therendsa. I didn't know that you were Therendsa. But yeah, World of Warcraft. I had a similar one with an EQ name where it's like, random, that sounds pretty cool. David, what's Kilo say?
Kilo says, originally I was Kashmir Cannon. After a cool track from the No More Heroes soundtrack, being Kilo Pascal comes from a message someone sent me in Seoul saying I was 1,000 times worse than them.
I almost guarantee you that message was sent after they lost. So,
yep. DarkSoulsHaters.com or .tumblr.com. Dennis, what's Sean say?
Sean says, I have been using Baron Malakai for years now. It was a character I played in the Camarilla White Wolf LARP. Yeah, Camarilla White Wolf LARP. I played Malkavian for years.
Crazy vampires.
And the name followed me into whatever it would fit. My avatar to the left, which is like a stick figure wearing a crown and with you got to see it. It's pretty cool. But anyway, my avatar to the left, I donated to Kingdom of Loathing for. My wife even sprung for a custom T-shirt with a blown up version of it a few years ago. That is pretty cool.
It's a pretty cool avatar. It definitely sticks out. He's got.
I really kind of like Baron Malakai, actually. That. Yeah, I could see that for like Malkavian, like that would be that foretells good storytelling.
Yeah, but Sean's is a little stick figure with a Pope hat holding a crossbow and a spider with a little pumpkin next to him, and it is in Kingdom of Loathing. It's in Zach's art style.
Nice,
really cool. Let's see here. Sean writes and says, my screen name for a long time over the internet and on Xbox Live was Crazy Yak with two E's, and still is in many places. That unfortunately came from my LOL random days, but to some extent, to keep it consistent, it stuck around. And that is what I am on. That's what I'm named on Steam now. Fast forward to getting a PS4 and making a name for PSN. My wife, understandably, was not into Crazy Yak, so I let her choose the name. And now I am Dropkick Zombies on the PlayStationverse. I'm not sure what the origin of that name is, but I know that she really likes dropkicking zombies and dying light,
Yes.
So it follows.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a lot of power to give someone. That's a trusting relationship right there.
Well, they have to share it. Like they're making a new joint identity. Like, you know, it used to be the there are two candles that lit the one unity candle. Now, like that. Now there's just like, you know, two hands, one keyboard, one shared pet power and cable login.
Is that like for a healthy marriage, you don't want to have separate bank accounts, and for a healthy marriage, you don't want to have separate PSN accounts?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you want to be able to share your games. Come on, man.
See, I feel like that could be like the new like feminist thing. Like, I'm going to take your last name when we marry, but you're going to take my screen name.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you know, it's give and take. Everything in life is compromise.
Yeah.
Although I know for a fact I have multiple profiles on my PS3, and I think if you log into Jen's profile, all the games are downloaded.
Oh.
So I'm not sure how that works.
I don't know. Let's see here, David. What does Steven say?
Steven says, Tremonster 91. Comes from my favorite guitarist, Mark Tremonti. Combined with my apparent unoriginality, since I had to include my birth year as well.
Hmm.
It's always the worst when you're like, I've got a really good one. What the? It's
dead. Yeah. I don't think I'd really want to change it, since I just send all my friends on PSN real name requests.
Yep, you're linked for life now.
Oh, is that a thing?
Real name requests, yeah.
Did not know that.
Yep. It's just so you can see their real name and not their not their PSN name.
Cool.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, my screen name for anything I can change it for is Dekiris.
Dekiris?
Dekiris, there we go, yeah. Or something of that. Oh, man, I really signed us up for a rough week. Yeah, Dekiris. It's a nice sounding word and can be shortened to Dake, D-A-E-K, easily by my friends or competitors. It's an obscure name from the David Grimmel Draenei novels.
Hmm.
One of the main protagonists is named Waylander, and this was his real name before he took to the road. When someone recognizes it, a great conversation about guilty pleasure reading is guaranteed, and I've used it for 20 odd years.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Stuck around, man.
That has some legs. Yeah, I like those ones that are shibboleths like that, where it is a name from something that is not readily known. It's not, you know, XXX Drizzed XX,
yeah,
or whatever. Yeah, that's good. Let's see here. Glenn writes in saying, I go for Zaturol or Ferris on most games, the first name being a misspelling of the StarCraft character Zeratul. The second is a Hebrew title I found in the New Testament in the Bible and thought that it looked cool. Yeah, I also like the crazy biblical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's names a lot of that, good material there. Yeah, names that just did not carry forward.
Yeah, I'm always disappointed that more people don't name their daughters Dorcas.
That was one of the goes. It's always funny to see, though, because it's like, you know, there was one really heroic person and then 10 people who like totally copped out. And the one person was like Caleb and the others were like Zerubbabel and whatever. So, like,
well,
see how that worked.
I think the worst was like in not to be like the podcast about Bible school, but like in the New Testament, there was one horrible Judas and there was one really, really awesome Judas.
Way to ruin it for the rest of us, Judas.
Well, cause like, yeah. And through the whole rest of it, every time it's like, you know, and Judas, not that one.
Like, and literally. Judas, the good one.
Yeah. I legitimately had a high school teacher who named his son Adolf.
Huh? Was it a family name?
It was a family name on his wife's side going back like four generations. And it was apparently like contingent on getting married, like before the relationship, before there was ever a baby even in the picture.
So you walked in, like, eyes opened.
Yeah, he knew what he was getting into. I don't know how happy he was about it, but
I mean,
that's a thing.
You can hide that with a middle name though, unless sure, you actually sure. have like it can't be Addie, it can't be Adi, like it or it has to be Adolf. You have to say it out loud and in a very curt, angry way.
And in that case, that eyes wide open conversation should signal you off of it.
My understanding is Adolf still fairly common in Germany. Am I wrong?
It's just a name.
Right.
I'm trying to think of like serial murderers that have fairly common names.
I mean, Charles. Like nobody yeah, doesn't name their kid Charles. Like Manson, probably. Like you don't name your kid Manson, but you know, like we still see people named Joseph, right?
Yeah.
Even though Stalin was there, like I don't know.
Yep.
Huh. defensive Adolf. That was weird.
I think that one's on me.
David, what does Nathan say? Or yeah, what does Nathan say?
Nathan says, back in my preteen years, I was obsessed with Final Fantasy VII and big anime sword dudes. Copyright. As young boys are sometimes want to do, somewhere I read that Cloud wielded a enormous Zweihammer. Turns out it was actually Zweihander. All yes. these years later, I'm still Zweihammer. Whoops.
Zweihammer. That's pretty good. That's poetic.
Zweihammer. I'm not going to lie. I think that's actually, out of all these, like my favorite screen name. I actually really am kind of envious that I didn't think of that.
I'm trying to think here. Heimer. That's usually like a suffix on something, right? But I don't know what Heimer actually means. Huh.
To Google Translate.
I Googled Heimer and all I got was Urban Dictionary. So derived from the 90s insult Dingleheimer. So
Heimer is a German surname. Notable people with the surname include Ernst Heimer, Manuel Heimer, and Uli Heimer.
Well, think about how fortunate you are that you went with Zweihammer, because now you don't have all of that namespace pollution, right? If somebody wants to search for you, you know, then you're there. Zweihander, you'd have a whole bunch of like sword resellers and Dark Souls builds and stuff. So it is a little bit, it is unique and searchable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Roop say?
Roop says, Mr. Mental Disease has been mine for long. As a teen, it seemed mystical and so on. Now I'm using R.J. Sebastian, as it's just the first letters of my first and second name combined with my third. Sebastian is a pretty badass name. I like Sebastian. Easy to remember, and it sounds like a name that an author might use.
Hmm.
This does. J.R.R. Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, R.J. Sebastian, all the greats.
Wait a minute. It's J.F. Sebastian. I was like, R.J. Sebastian, isn't that character from Blade Runner? I said, that's sweet, like, awesome. But I don't know, maybe that's a feature, not a bug. Home again, jiggity jig. Nice. Let's see here. Christopher writes in saying, the only one I really have is John Locke Phone Punch on Steam. And it's really just a combination of the actor Terry O'Quinn, who played John Locke on Lost, punching someone with a telephone in the 80s horror film The Stepfather.
Ooh, that is a lot of steps to get to a screen name.
But it's pretty good.
And it's readable, so, you know, I'm all for it.
Was it John Locke, like, a philosophizer?
Yes, yeah, I believe that he his work was foundational to the founding fathers, actually, and his ideas on freedom and such. I may be confusing him with Hobbes, but I think Hobbes was the hard ass among them.
Yeah, was it like Hobbes versus Locke?
I think so. I couldn't.
And then like Locke punched him with the phone,
and then Locke won.
Welcome to the level does history. The lever does history too.
Yep. We do the lever later.
I've been drinking a little bit. What?
Let's see here. David, what does Carlos say?
Carlos says, in early college, I was writing a novel that tried to capture the horror of superpowers gone wrong. One such character was Flash Persona, a troubled young man with an uncontrollable teleportation relay that took him to different dimensions, times, and places at random. My nephew took the name for his Twitter account and trolled a bunch of people with it. So it will be abandoned by me once Sony lets me change my screen name.
Oh no.
Yeah, your nephew sounds pretty cool.
Ouch.
No, it's just that's more effort than I would expect anybody who's a nephew to go to. Huh.
Pro tip, nephews never actually age past about 14.
Yeah, I'm still I'm a nephew, and I'm never not wearing a backwards baseball cap.
there's a code, there's a dress code.
And there's a meeting. Oh man.
NA, this is not what I was expecting.
Nope, there's a why do we hold these meetings in the basement of a church? So misguided. Let's see here. I will. Which one of us? Who just went?
I think I'm up.
Okay, Dennis. What does Brandon say?
Brandon says, "I am boring and use my real name as often as possible. If I have to be creative, I add a couple numbers on the end."
I like the cut of your jib, Brandon. I mean, I have stories for like some screen names that I use, but like nowadays, I'm a brand, guys. I got to get my face out there, you know.
And your face says, "I'm boring. I'm just using my name."
Yeah, my face says, "I'm not afraid to hide who I am."
Except wait, behind this epic beard.
Well,
that, not afraid to not hide.
Yeah, I'm not afraid to not hide. No, yeah. See.
That's the Sunglasses Hut campaign, right? Never not hide.
Yeah. And the beard might change live on Duckstream. Who knows?
Oh, you're going to do that this year.
Yeah. So the plan is I need to set the amounts because I'm not sure how quickly things are going to come in. But I want to go from a full beard down to mutton chops and goatee to just goatee to mustache and then nothing. So progressively as it goes on camera.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I just attributed a Ray-Ban campaign to Sunglasses Hut, so that's cool.
wait, that was actually a slogan?
Never not hiding? Yeah. No, it's never hide.
Okay.
Okay, because I was going to say, that seems like that's more like the stereotype of people wearing like sunglasses.
Yeah. Ray-Ban, this will fool the police sketch artist.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Timothy writes in saying, "Oh, geez, my screen name has been some version of Frothy Ham since sometime in high school. I'm in my 30s now. The frothy just came from liking the sound of that word when spoken in an exaggerated British accent." I don't even know how you would begin doing that.
And frothy.
There we go. And the ham came from an in-joke between my dad and I around the phrase ham-handed. It never made much sense, but I just kept it going for whatever reason. Yeah, that's a good screen name.
Sense of screen name momentum across everyone. Like, you've got it, and you just it seems like so much trouble to change.
I know it is definitely an inertia around it because it's like changing your phone number.
Yes, I was actually just about to say I'll change my screen name where I change my phone number.
I just had the realization that my screen name might be taken on PlayStation 4. Well, no, because it's all a PSN account, right?
Yeah, yeah. You just log in with your same shit.
All right, I should be fine.
Yeah, you can't escape that. Yeah. I have to say, Timothy's avatar, I feel like it is staring into my soul.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
It sees what I did there.
It's a line art drawing of his face centered on the eye. Staring into David's soul in particular. Yes. David, what does Michael say?
Michael says, "Cream cannon came from my time at culinary school, being proficient in piping decorations on cakes, and the best at it in my group led me to being called cream cannon. The chief instructors approved of this, but sadly not as much as the regulations held by MMOs."
That's a pretty good one. We see Michael haunting around, but I've never seen him use cream cannon, and that is delightful.
I feel like, I wonder what the, like, how game moderators handle some of that.
I don't know. I think that it's very much in the eye of the beholder. Like, if you interpret it as being dirty, then...
Yeah, we all just failed the Rorschach test.
I just remember, like, back playing City of Heroes, every so often you would... see a character that was like had the, you know, name of like you know, fairly popular, you know, like famous superhero, but like was not you know, made like them, you know, power set wasn't like them. So it's like that person probably legitimately is not trying to just recreate the superhero they like.
Mm. Yeah, and they're just hiding behind the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Dennis, what does Omgamoose say?
Oh man, I get the juicy one. Everyone's been wondering about this one, and he even says, "I feel like if I don't respond to this question, I will get it emailed to me, since I always get asked the same two questions about the name: where is it from, and how do you say it? Not usually in that order. Well, my Facebook name here is just the combination of the two screen names I use. Revdomazy comes from my teen years when I was super into anime. I wish I could say I remember where it comes from exactly, but I don't. Just that it was something that was translated really poorly, and I've stuck with the username since then because it's never been taken. OMG Amoose comes back from back when I played a lot of Counter-Strike in 2000. A lot of popping around corners, surprising people, yada yada. Moose instead of another animal because OMG a Basset Hound is just a bit too long.
I feel bad because we started out saying OMG Moose as a joke, and that just became the way it was said out loud on the show. So, yes. but it is written out as though it is a crazy long name, huh? Neat.
Good stuff.
I don't know. I sort of like OMG a Basset Hound.
Omega Boss Ethound.
Sure.
Yeah. And I'm going to round us out. We have come up on time here with Jonathan, who writes in saying, my screen name started as a combination of the song titled Space Lion from the Cowboy Bebop soundtrack and a lyric from my friend's band. The lyric, I thought you were a lion, but you were a bear, was combined with a catchy riff that still stuck in my head somewhere. Thus, Space Lion _ bear or Space Lion bear was conceived. I've kept that handle for a number of years for the most part, though I often shorten it just to Space Lion when able, as it's shorter and easier to say.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also another common factor among these is how readily can it be shortened?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So Dennis, I'm going to throw to you for our own personal ones because I know yours and I know the story behind it, but I want people to share.
Yeah. So mine is Green Laser typically, which I came up with in eighth grade. It was the first username I ever created, and it was on StarWars.com. And I thought it was being really clever because all the bad guys' lasers are green. Mm-hmm. So it was like a weapon of the enemy kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And then I throw 73 on it if it's taken, which is my football number. And I've never had that stop me. Mm-hmm. The other random one was I will sometimes use Shogris. And I think that's my name on
Showgirls?
Shogris. Shogrus.
Okay.
Shogris. It is a made-up word that I made for a made-up language in the Jack and Daxter fan fiction I wrote, so that's cool.
you admitted it! Oh, man.
Yeah, so there's that. But it's short, easy to say,
yeah,
and usually isn't taken.
That's unique.
Yeah, but Green Laser is always my first choice.
Yeah. It's pretty good. I like a Homestar reference.
It's the Green Laser.
I was pre-Green Laser. Thank you very much. Pre-Blue Laser, Green Laser? I don't even know.
Let's see here. David, how about you?
Sure. I usually go with Revenant, usually prefixed by 777, because that's not creative at all. I do kind of like it. I really enjoy folklore. That's something I really find interesting, and that's the technical name within the study of folklore for in a story someone who returns from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Which mostly just goes back to the fact that I chose this name back when Counter-Strike was badass. But I feel like now is oddly appropriate considering that, usually when I'm playing a game, I definitely lead my team in number of times I've been killed. So I feel like there is some appropriateness.
Yeah, there's a little bit of poetry to it, yeah.
Yeah. I would say in terms of change it, I actually really dislike the name.
Mm-hmm.
Because... I don't know. I just reminds me of how much of a dork I was when I was little, but I'm horrible at coming up with names. So,
oh, yeah. So might as well. Again, inertia, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So where I can, I just go by Cole Ross. That's my Twitter name. That is my actual name. And it just, I don't know, like I don't see fit to create an identity beyond it almost. But, I have two like legacy screen names that, that pretty much stick around. One is Song for the Deaf, which I am on Steam, Xbox Live, and the Something Awful forums. Just it's an obvious Queens of the Stone Age thing. I picked it right when I was leaving high school and going into college and signed up for a bunch of those services. And it's like, I really like this song. That is a cool name for this. You know, that's a cool name for a song. And I liked music. And then obviously the whole radio thing worked into it as well. Audio is important. Mm-hmm. So I did that. The other one is Zap 1120. Because Zapdos is my favorite Pokemon, and 1120 is my birthday.
Nice.
Yeah. So, really boring stuff. One is a juvenile high school thing. The other one is an even more juvenile thing. It has to do with the Pokemon and my birthday. And one is just me. Oh, also Arsonyk, spelled Arsonyk. Because that was a cool name that I came up with for the crime of poisoning somebody and setting them on fire. So, that was my World of Warcraft name for a while.
Was that? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was gonna say I think I remember that from WoW.
Yep. It's a pretty good name. That's what I'll name my characters in RPGs, but it's not really a screen name.
That's actually reasonably creative. I kind of like that.
I just stumbled upon it. I was like, oh, this is pretty good. Oh, I gave somebody, a guy that I was working with, I'm gonna out him and his name, but I named one of my creations in Spore the Jabbershock, and you know, I was like, that's goofy, right? And then he took that, and now that's his screen name that he goes by because he liked it so much. So that was a freebie.
I have to say, my two favorite I've ever seen was there's a heroine in Kingdom of Lothian, City of Heroes, someone made, who was like stone based powers. It was Monolithe, which I kind of like. And nice. One of them that I always found kind of entertaining was someone that went by G.I. Jew, a real American Hebrew, which I hope this was a person that was actually Jewish, not just someone who like used this as an excuse to like shout anti-Semitic things when they lost. Yeah. Like I'm assuming the best for that because I think it's kind of witty.
Mm-hmm. Huh, that could go either way, couldn't it?
Yeah.
I saw somebody on the GameFAQs message boards. This was like 10 years or something back before we were really diving into it for Abject Suffering, obviously. But their name was HP Hovercraft.
Oh, that's good.
Which was pretty good. Yeah. So screen names, they are our identities. Not here on the show, but for a lot of us in these services.
You assume this is my real name.
I've known you since like preschool, dog. Sorry, I didn't mean to shut you down so quick.
Weak.
It's a long con.
Oh, so if you want to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for those prompts to go out on Tuesday afternoons. Thank you, Dennis, for putting that out. Thank you, Jala, for coming up with the prompt. And yeah, we're looking forward to more of these in the future.
The grind.
Now it's time for the grind, where we talk about what we've been playing over the past week or so. And turns out it's not much, but I'm going to throw it to you, Dennis, for yours.
Yeah, so I tried to play something new, and it didn't work out too hot for me, which you guys can tell me after I've told the story, and you can tell me if I have anyone to blame but myself.
No.
But I decided to try a game called La Mulana X.
E-E-E-X, yeah, there we go.
Yeah, and just had heard good things about it, heard it was kind of like a Zelda/Metroid platformer that was difficult but rewarding, had a lot of puzzle elements to it, and it was all those things. So it's interesting that it cops a lot, I think, from Zelda and those games, but it still feels like it's got its own unique flair. You're an archaeologist who is going to explore the La Milana ruins, which is this, you know, amazing network of caves and ancient temples and stuff that is said to contain some kind of secret to the origin of human life. And there's something about your dad is down there and hasn't come back out. And there's a village around there that you start in. You know, it's your standard adventure game fare. Mm-hmm. The platforming is kind of interesting. It's really weird. Your jump is very precise in a way I haven't seen before. So you can either jump straight up or you jump at a very specific angle if you're moving in one direction or another. And you can't really change where your momentum once you jump. You can only change the apex of your jump. So you kind of jump in a V. And your only real control is where, you know, how high that V goes.
So it's like a Castlevania.
Yeah, okay, I forget which game, but I know it's very explicitly is meant to imitate one of the games of like the era it's imitating. So I guess it's probably Castlevania.
Yeah. Like it's also a little bit the case in like Spelunky too, although they don't do as much with like the momentum conservation. You just have a very predictable jump in that.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. And then like, you know, if you jump straight up, then at the apex, you can kind of jump downwards in one direction or another. Mm-hmm. It would make sense if it's Castlevania, cause that's a blind spot for me. So that's interesting. I also really liked the puzzle elements. I was able to get through the game really well. The thing I judge puzzles by is am I breezing through or am I getting stuck or am I at a nice kind of midpoint where it's challenging me, but I'm not frustrated. And it hit that sweet spot for me. Mm-hmm. Lots of very obscure things. Like the game was not afraid to trust that you would eventually pay attention to detail enough to find things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a little section of floor is slightly raised. Okay, that's probably a pressure plate, or this block is slightly a different color than everything else. You learn very quickly that there's no, you know, mistakes in the design of the levels. There's no just throwaways. It's all intentional, which feels good once you when you kind of pick that thing out and actually it does turn into something. So I enjoyed that. Got through, call it the first two areas of the game. It's got that Dark Souls vibe where you can kind of get as far as you want in the game when you start, and it doesn't really give you a ton of direction on where the bad areas are and where the good areas are. Mm-hmm. Besides just these enemies are way out of my league. There's even something in the instruction manual kind of alluding to that. And it's like, hey, you'll be able to get further than you should initially. So maybe focus on clearing the initial areas before going forward. Yeah. Not in those words, but something to that effect. So I accidentally wandered into one of the further on than I should be areas and kind of got over to a save point. And was like, oh crap, you know, I need to get back. So I saved and tried to make my way back. Little did I realize, because of the puzzle setup, I couldn't get back the way that I came.
Hmm.
So I had to go around and try to get as far as I could through this really hard area to get back to the beginning. And after much trying and dying a lot, I finally did. I was able to do it. Only to find out that I did not have enough of an item in my inventory, weights, they're called, to activate the door to get back into the other area.
Oh no.
So literally I am locked in this more difficult than I can handle area. And I have no, like I'd been saving over the same file, so that shame on me, right? But I, you know, I'm saved at that point. I can't get back the way I came. Like I could maybe go and farm enemies, hoping one of them would drop it. Mm-hmm. I can probably get out that way, but again, I'm facing enemies that are well out of my league, and it's just a really hostile area. So after poking around for a bit, and even after figuring out a way to get through the level back to where I wanted to be, I had to just be like, I'm done. It's not worth the investment, me trying to continue with this game. And I was far enough in that, you know, maybe 2 hours of play and something like that, that I felt really bad saying I was going to go back to the start and just hard start over. So it's kind of tragic. Like I enjoyed what I played of the game, but just due to bad save hygiene, I'm kind of screwed out of continuing with it. Although I would argue that it's really weird. Again, there's you have to collect weights. They're a drop where you can buy them in shops, and their only function is to put on pressure plates to activate stuff. So I'm not sure, like, in what world would it be fun or challenging to run out of them? Like, it's just a matter of, did I buy enough before I went into the ruins? So that felt...
So that's incredibly unfriendly and pretty disrespectful of your time.
Yeah, it just... And again, I wonder if the developer kind of got just, you know, there's so many elements going on in the game that maybe they just, and I know it's a smaller team that developed it, maybe they just, you know, weren't able to think through all that stuff.
I think maybe some of it is also, you know, the game is sort of a proto Dark Souls.
It's got a lot of those elements, yeah.
And like, it is very explicitly designed to be incredibly difficult.
Yeah,
right. But
I think to a certain degree, whatever the like line of like of computers that were released in like Japan and stuff like that, but
with
like
the MSX and stuff like that. Yeah,
yeah. It's very explicitly meant to be like a homage to that, and so I think it's. Part of it is it's kind of trying to channel some of the Nintendo hard type things,
which they've done. But for me, at least, it's been in a way that prevents me from continuing with the game in any form. And yeah. I invested a good amount of time into figuring out how I could get out of this pickle I'd put myself in.
Sure.
It's just, again, wound up being impossible. And I could spend another hour on it trying to farm, you know, farm bad guys that are out of my league until one of them drops this weight. But I don't even know if that could happen.
My suggestion would be look online and see if there's a save game editor.
He's probably playing it on the PS.
Unfortunately, on the Vita.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is where I have it too.
So my first suggestion would be get it on Steam. My second suggestion,
the actual helpful suggestion would be.
Yeah.
So is it the kind of thing? So I mean, obviously you're pretty soured on this and wouldn't want to go back to it, but like, you know, and also you got this for free, so you're not like this isn't really spilled milk or anything.
Yeah, not super invested. Yeah. So.
But like, I mean, it kind of seems like the kind of game where knowledge compresses space. And so could you get back to where you were or, you know, kind of speed through to a place where to right before you made that mistake, right? Like just by going in and doing the thing as opposed to exploring.
That's just like start from the new game.
Yeah. Start from a new game and then like just, you know, go through and do the optimal way because you know how to solve whatever puzzles are in those first couple areas.
This then brings me to the other weird thing about the game, is they kind of build in a certain amount of grinding into it to make it playable. So, and again, they talk about it in the manual, which I love me a good manual, but in the manual, it's like, hey, there are two items in the shop. There's the hand scanner and the glyph reader, and you need those items. Don't move forward in the game until you can get those items, but they're relatively expensive. And so there's a good amount of grinding that goes into... getting enough coin to pick them up. And I think when they did that, it kind of acts as a tutorial because you kind of putz around in the lower level areas and get a real feel for the controls while you're trying to get that money. But at that point, why not? Like if it's so important, if the game's going to be broken, if I don't pick them up, instead of just shouting at me in the manual that I need them, just give them to me.
Yeah.
Like it felt weird that they didn't give those to me off the bat. It felt weird that they, you know, made pressure plates a finite resource, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, cribbing from that Nintendo hard thing, I get that vibe, but they kind of took that off a cliff a little bit.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, now that you ask it, I'm wondering how long, because I think it's like 60 gold. And your average enemy drops one, maybe every couple of enemies. So it's probably something like 120 enemies I'd have to kill to get the coin for it.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to do the math in my head of how long that would take. I don't know. And then, but then there's also that maybe if I just load up that save game again, and if I just grind those level enemies, or maybe if I just find the right place to find a scale, like I need a comprehensive guide of the area I'm in to tell me exactly where the weights are, so I can.
I would say one of the things with that is if you look online and read any of like the advice for the games, you know, kind of the equivalent of like the 10 things you need to know before playing Bloodborne mm-hmm. type articles.
Mm-hmm.
All of them say, like, you need to realize in order to beat this game, you will eventually need to read a wiki.
Yeah.
Like, interesting. It's my understanding, I'm bad at puzzles, so I think I, like, got stuck long before you have. But my understanding is just the puzzles eventually get just incredibly obscure and difficult.
Yeah, like it's to the point where the puzzles, like beating this game without a guide, is considered to be a feat. That right. is something that like Riff on Video Games Hot Dog talked about at length in his kind of journey to go into this completely blind and get through, and he did. And he talked about like needing to fill up a notebook and stuff. I think that's separate from actually, you know, playing and beating the game. Like that, like, to me, solving a puzzle is different from I'm irrevocably stuck in this place where I can't get out.
Sure. As a side note, like that, the items you have to grind for are, my understanding is, are the ability to like read the hints and stuff like that. They're around. That's what you fill up your notebook with, right?
I mean, he was talking about like a physical notebook.
Right. Yeah, but what I'm saying,
that's the other frustrating thing is there's no way to capture the notes that you read. You read a lot of notes, and there's all the notes are like clues to mm-hmm. solve the puzzles in the area. But if you're like, unless you're writing it down on your own, there's no way to access them mm-hmm. except for going back to that. Yeah. And half the time you can't remember where you saw, like it'll mention, hey, the Chamber of Light. And I'll be like, I saw that on one of the skeletons in the 20 rooms behind me where there's about 40 skeletons. Shit.
That was what ultimately soured me on the game was the fact that like it got to the point where like I spent more time transcribing these notes than I did playing. Yeah. And it just... I wasn't willing to do that.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
Just so I guess it just comes down to like, does it feel like it's worth it to try and save the experience? Like, do you think there's going to be something good on the other side of this?
I can't say I'm going to pick it back up. I don't know.
Okay, no, I'm not imploring you to.
The Vita is on my nightstand, and so if I'm ever just like, you know, having trouble falling asleep and want to play something, I'll pick up my Vita, and that is the game on there that I am most familiar with. It's the game mm-hmm. I've got momentum with. So I don't know, but yeah.
Maybe this will be like your Dark Souls, where this podcast, you're like, this episode, you're like, I hate this game. Next episode, you're like, yeah, I'm starting a podcast about this game.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yep. Huh. Did you have anything else?
No, that was it.
Okay. Cool. I'm just going to go because I really don't have anything. Like this past week has been spent getting ready for these upcoming live shows or this upcoming live show and then also playing System Shock. Boy, oh boy, are people going to be mad at that episode of Watch Out for Fireballs. I kind of want to correct something that I said last week when I was talking about Guitar Hero Live. I've been playing a little bit more of that, and I still continue to really love the playing music part of it. I think I was talking about the free-to-play side of things, and I mentioned that, like, oh, it's not too bad because you can go in and actually just buy a song to have in your library. I remember that being part of the tutorial. I remember them saying, hey, you can go over to this store and buy songs for you to have in your library. However, there were some people, I think like Brian Wade maybe, who was like talking on the Slack about like, oh, that's totally not true. And I was like, I probably need to go and like actually like double check and make sure. I'm not sure what I bought when I bought the thing that I bought.
Oh, no.
But if it's there, they're doing a really good job of hiding it. So if I was wrong when I said that, I'm very sorry. I'm still trying to figure it out. It sucks that they are hiding it if they're hiding it. and they're trying to push you to the limited number of plays or whatever for the DLC songs. Because like if a Queens of the Stone Age pack comes out, I just want to buy all the Queens of the Stone Age songs or, you know, other artists I like, even more than that. Like there's a possibility that those things could happen. But, you know, that is not great if it is the case, but I wasn't able to replicate that thing I did that first time. So, but otherwise it's still a fucking goofy game. Yeah. I don't know. I'm looking forward to playing a little bit more because I'm not sure how much more single player I have left. The track list is really long and I know I haven't played that many songs.
Interesting.
Yeah. Any questions about that?
No.
All right.
Let's keep on a trucking.
Yeah. David, how about you? What you got?
Sure. I actually don't have that much. I feel a little bit guilty because for like the third week in a row, all I've played is some Destiny.
Yep.
So the main thing is most of it's honestly just been kind of grinding. I'm sort of a little bit to the point where like playing Destiny is kind of my like zen like meditation after work type thing. I tried some of the multiplayer. It's really low player counts, so kind of as mentioned previous, for the most part, it doesn't really work for me. But there's a game mode that it's only available like once, like basically they rotate through like every week, like one of the multiplayer game modes, and so it's only available sometime. But it's called Mayhem Clash. So okay. It's basically team deathmatch, but your super abilities, grenades and melee, respawn just crazy, crazy fast.
Huh.
And in Destiny, for people who haven't played, like your super abilities are just blatantly overpowered. So like for one of my classes, I basically can throw like flaming like Thor's hammers that explode when they hit something and seek in on enemies. Similarly, with like the melee attacks, when they're off of cooldown, they are usually a one-hit kill. And also my class has a ability where basically when I sprint, if I do a melee attack, you instead do like a knee check that's off at one hit kill. So the end effect is basically the game quickly devolve into just like superpowers the game.
Well, I mean, it sounds like what you liked about Fear multiplayer.
Yeah. Yeah, it has some elements of that. It's also like it's one of those things, like I said, you can't play it all the time. It's very much not. It's kind of the polar opposite of like the Final Destination's no items.
Right, because it's meant to be fun, not balanced.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So like
not to be glib, yeah. I'm sorry, but
right. Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean kind of is. So like the description of it, the like match description of it is just have fun.
Nice.
Like, yeah, so it, you know, it's one of those things that's like I kind of respect that. Just be like, yep, it's gonna be crazy. So that's pretty much all I have to say about it. It's yeah, I it's enjoyable. I like they have once a day you can play they have one specified multiplayer mode that if you play one match in it, you get like 15 basically like 15 legendary marks, which you need about like 60 to about 60 of them or 70 of them to get a legend or like a legendary item, and like 100 something of them to get like a legendary weapon. So they're fairly valuable. So I kind of like that, like even if you're a PvE player, like Maybe play a little bit of multiplayer, like one a day. Like that's kind of cool.
When you talk about doing multiplayer, you're specifically talking about the Crucible.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Is that the word for it in Destiny's?
Yes. Okay. Yes. They kind of do the Half-Life. I'm sorry. The Halo thing of we're going to basically take things that are in every game and give them like crazy names.
Okay.
So It's not Deathmatch or Slayer. It's Clash.
Okay.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
God forbid you'd be able to figure out what you're going to be playing.
I don't know. Like, again, it's sort of to the degree to, like, coming from the perspective of, like, I'm someone who will play one match a day and I don't even have to win to get the reward I want.
Yeah.
Like, I sort of like going in and being like, I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, no, like, chaos can be fun, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's not what everybody is there for, but, you know, it can be worthwhile. Sorry, I froze there for a second.
No. Yeah, and it seems like the game, I miss the Halo style of gameplay where it's sort of like brawling with guns.
Yeah.
You know, where like melee attacks are real important and it's real close range and, you know, long time to kill. I miss that, but on the other hand, I feel like in compensation, there's just a lot of crazy freaking shit you can do.
Yeah.
So there's
like different combinations.
Right. Well, like, for example, basically, you can equip one exotic armor and one exotic weapon, and all of the exotics have their armor perks will be something just weird that's otherwise not available in the game.
Okay.
And as example, one of the ones from my class, the Titan, there's a helmet that basically when you aim your weapon while in the air, you'll just like hang in the air for a moment.
Oh, that's cool.
So the end result of that is you can have things where like all of a sudden you get sniped by a dude that's like levitating over the wall you're running past. You know, so there's like a lot of just crazy shit like that.
Yeah. That's cool. I mean, and if it rewards experimentation, like what I would worry about is if those builds are ossified into these really kind of just, here's the code, here's what you're going to pursue. Like,
yeah,
and you're going to see a bunch of the same stuff. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like it's that way with weapons, from what I read, like on the Reddit boards. And I think part of the reason for that is they do stat normalization. So it ends up being like, I think that this is a dramatic oversimplification, but it's something like everything's normalized. So getting hit by three bullets will kill you. Therefore, you do whatever weapon is easiest to hit someone with three bullets. Like, so it's not that
three
that's
bullets
like
kill
like
a, him.
That, like I said, that's a dramatic oversimplification, but it's something like that. But it seems like with armor and with like class abilities, it seems like things are a little bit more more loosey goosey.
Yeah. So. Neat. Well, yeah, that is definitely a side of Destiny that I haven't heard too much about, like the Crucible side. Most everybody talks about running missions and farming for shit, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Neat. Do you guys want to button it up?
Let's do so.
The credit.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 127 of The Level. Wow, that is a big number. by kind of just a business here, we're not going to have an episode next week because I personally am going to be out of town for a family reason, and it doesn't make sense to record in that sense. So we're going to be back the next week. Sorry about that if you were counting on us, but it can't be avoided. Other than that, we've got the live stream coming up, the charity stream, the weekend that begins on Friday, November the 20th. We're still pinning the schedule down for that, but keep your eyes peeled on the social channels. We're going to blast that out. It's for a good cause. It's for the Transactive Gender Center. I don't know. I'm excited to get in there and play some games and have a good time. It was very fun last year. But other than that, there's the usual stuff, the iTunes, the Facebook, Slack. If you want to back us on the Patreon, you can, you know, slam jam at the $2 or up level and get into our chat room and kind of hang out. Like, it's a real neat place to be. I enjoy it very much. Am I missing anything, guys? Am I forgetting anything we want to promote?
Tell a friend.
Yes, please do tell a friend. If they like video games, we are a general purpose video game podcast, but you knew that.
If they don't like video games, we spend most of the podcast not talking about video games.
Well, oh, come on. It's the I will defend our tangents to the death. until next time, I am Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I am Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter, and that may or may not be my real name.
Ooh, he's a Manchurian candidate. And until next time, thank you so much for listening. Okay. Let's see here. I've got some titles, and then we can throw some on at the end. The Anik Body, Submillennials, Never Trust a Nephew, and Three Bullets Will Kill Him.
Oh, Never Trust a Nephew, I say.
Yeah, I feel like that one is definitely for like the story behind it. I really like Three Bullets Will Kill Him, just because
it's another callback, though. I feel like we did a callback too recently.
Oh, did we? Okay. What was the second one?
Submillennials.
Okay, that one's good too. I'd probably go with Never Trust a Nephew.
Okay.
But
cool. So I'll continue to put these into the Slack, not so much for voting, but because I like people guessing. Cool.